Hello, I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Health. Our topic today is the diagnosis and treatment of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in children, adolescents, and adults. I'd like to thank the University of Virginia School of Medicine for accrediting the program. I'd also like to thank Shire for providing the educational grant to make this program possible. Physicians and other healthcare professionals can earn free CME credit by registering online at discoveryhealthcme.com and taking the post-test. All the graphics and references from today's program will also be available online. It's easy to log on, take the post-test, and earn free credit for the program, so do it today. We're fortunate to have a distinguished group of experts in the studio with us today to discuss the care of patients with ADHD, Dr. Andrew Addisman, Chief of the Division of Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics, Schneider Children's Hospital, New Hyde Park, New York. Dr. Josephine Elia, Attending Psychiatrist, Medical Co-Director, ADHD Center, the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And Dr. James McCracken, Director of the Division of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, UCLA Semmel Institute, Los Angeles, California. Thank you all for joining us today. During the next hour, we will discuss diagnosing children and adults with ADHD, appropriately treating children and adolescents with ADHD with related medical and psychiatric comorbidities, including depression, substance abuse, oppositional defiant disorder, and learning disability, identifying ways in which ADHD symptoms change as patients approach adulthood, treating adults with ADHD with related medical and psychiatric comorbidities, including substance abuse, depression, and hypertension, and communicating the risks and benefits of all available therapeutic options with patients and family members. Doctors, let's start with the prevalence of ADHD. How common is the disorder in the United States?
Well, in children, the estimates have increased. It used to be thought 3 to 5%. More recent estimates suggest about 8% of school-age children, with the disorder being more common in boys than in girls.
One of the interesting and newer findings relates to the prevalence of ADHD in adulthood. Somewhat to our surprise, studies such as the National Comorbidity Study has suggested that as many as 3 to 4% of adults in community surveys meet full criteria for ADHD, much higher than many of us would have predicted in the past.
The higher prevalences that we're noting are not due to the fact that it's occurring at a higher rate now than it probably had in the past, but rather due to the fact that we have methods of identifying it and treating it, and people are more aware of that. Don't you think so, Sean?
I agree, and I would add to that that while our ability to identify and diagnose ADHD has improved overall, we're still seeing that the majority of individuals who are identified in such community samples are going without treatment. That's especially so in adults with ADHD.
To add to that, we're probably also missing individuals with a diagnosis. An example I can give is individuals with the inattentive subtypes, where they're not disrupting the classroom or disrupting the workplace, can frequently, not be identified.
I think most people are familiar with the concept of ADHD in children, so let's begin there. What are the diagnostic criteria?
Well, we rely on a formal system of behavioral symptoms to make the diagnosis, as described in the DSM-4. These were developed out of efforts to describe the syndrome in school-age children primarily, and they fall into two categories of symptoms, those referring to concentration or inattentive symptoms, and those referring to hyperactive or impulsive symptoms. According to criteria, one must meet six or more symptoms of either one or both of these areas or dimensions. Just some examples of those symptoms among the inattentive symptoms, that would include doesn't seem to listen, needs frequent reminders, has difficulty finishing work, often loses things. Among the hyperactive impulsive symptoms, these are the ones you might expect, often fidgets, squirms, needs to get out of seat often, blurts out answers to questions in class, and so on. There are other criteria that go into making up the diagnosis. One includes the need for some of those symptoms to be present at least by the age of 7, and for the symptoms to be evident in more than one situation or setting.
And also to cause impairment. Because many of us have these symptoms or have a certain degree of these symptoms, but you really meet diagnostic criteria if they impair some area of functioning, be it at school, be it socially, be it within the home setting.
We had the opportunity to meet with some patients to help explore the different aspects of ADHD. Kendrick, who lives in New Orleans, is 12 years old, and he and his brother both have ADHD.
For somebody who's never been to New Orleans, I describe New Orleans as fun. I feel like I'm very lucky to have the family that I have. My mom, my dad, my brother. They're all very supportive of me.
When he was a little kid, I was so happy. One day I saw him sitting down playing for like 4 hours, and I'm like, thank God this one doesn't have ADHD.
I was acting up a little bit in class, so my mom thought I might have ADHD like my brother did.
When he was in second grade, he began to have a lot of problems in school with focusing and his attention, being kind of disruptive.
Like, I remember telling her, and she was like, nah, he doesn't have it. And I kept telling her, and finally one day she brought him into the doctor to get him tested, and she was like, you're right, he definitely has it.
We chose to include a medication. The first medication was a long-acting stimulant, and it worked well for him for a while. The doctor made the decision to change to a different type of medication. It's also a long-acting medicine, but it works a little different than the first stimulant. He takes his ADHD medication in the morning before he goes to school.
I'm at school and I'm on my medication. It feels like I'm more focused on a teacher.
They've provided this teacher as a support to him in keeping track of his assignments.
Kendrick focuses on everything, and he has a hard time zooming in on one thing. So my job is essentially to help him organize his processes, organize his thoughts, and help him from getting overwhelmed. One of Kendrick's biggest triggers is stress.
I have this ball of clay I use to squeeze sometimes. And it just helps a lot. I don't like to use a stress ball because it always goes back to its normal shape. I like to have it in the shape that I left it in.
He's very much a good student. He works hard, he does his best.
I notice that my medication is wearing off when I start to face out a little bit and I start talking a little bit more during class.
The worst thing is that he doesn't always write down his assignments, so sometimes he'll come home without his homework assignment written down, which causes him to get behind. Most times he does not take medication on the weekend. Now if he knows that I want him to get his room clean, he'll decide to take maybe a smaller dose. Or if he's working on a project that needs to be done over the weekend for school, he'll make a decision to take the medication on the weekend. During Hurricane Katrina, we all packed up and we left about 3 or 4 in the morning. As I watched the news and saw that the water was high and it was clear that it's gonna be a while before we go home, I immediately went and enrolled Kendrick in one of the local schools. So he was in school within a week. And I think that was good because it was able to make sure that he kept some normalcy in his life.
I kind of adapted with it. Everything was in place for me at the new school. I liked it because I liked the school a lot. I made a lot of new friends.
The advice that I have for other parents of children dealing with ADHD is always be an advocate for your child, because the children know that they're misbehaving and they're getting in trouble. The last thing they need is a parent who's going to be coming down hard on them all the time as if this was willful behavior. He's been a delight in my life, and it helped me to see that it wasn't just my poor parenting, it was a disorder.
As the tape is showing, medicines can be really quite effective in managing the symptoms. On the tape, Kendrick is taking his own medicine, which was a little bit surprising for me, because he's a 12-year-old, and frequently at this age, many of these kids need a little bit of parental supervision in taking the medicine.
Absolutely. Although on the one hand, we do want our patients to assume some responsibility for their medication. And as Kendrick's mom also mentioned, you know, parent advocacy is important. The flip side of it is sometimes supervision is required depending on the age of the child.
One aspect of Kendrick's story that I liked a lot is the wonderful job that mother has done in creating a solid collaboration with the schools to meet Kendrick's needs. She also brings out a couple of other points that we often see in parents in relationship to their child's ADHD. There's frequently a lot of concern and initial sense of responsibility or blame, but as we've come to understand ADHD, as in Kendrick's case, this is frequently a familial disorder with genes playing a big role in the etiology of ADHD.
Brings up an interesting point. Kendrick's mother indicated that his ADHD didn't really look like his brother's. How do you make the diagnosis?
Well, the diagnosis of ADHD is primarily a clinical diagnosis. It's based on the diagnostic criteria laid out in the DSM-IV. And there are guidelines put out for clinicians by the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. And both of the groups support the importance of getting information from parents and from teachers. And oftentimes, rating scales are an important and effective way to get this information in a systematic manner. The Vanderbilt rating scale, for example, is one rating scale that's available. It's available in English and in Spanish, and there are parent and teacher versions available. And it's available online at no cost to clinicians. These rating scales are important, and they're a great way to get information. However, clinicians do need to be mindful that the rating scales alone are not a basis for a diagnosis. Regardless of how the scores come out, it's really still ultimately a clinical diagnosis. The other important piece is that in terms of diagnosis, neither laboratory tests nor psychological testing is essential. And in fact, oftentimes neither laboratory tests nor psychological testing is required or recommended.
I think rating scales are a very efficient way of gathering information for the clinician. But to go beyond that, it's critical for physicians to identify the nature of impairments, where these symptoms are causing interference, where they're getting in the way at school, at home, with family, perhaps in peer relationships. That's going to be critical in terms of guiding our next steps relating to treatment.
Making the diagnosis just from the office visit and just either a physical exam or observing the child in the office you're not likely to be able to reach any diagnosis, because in a one-to-one, in a structured setting where there's a lot of focused attention on the child, the behavior may be very different than what's observed in a school setting where children are being observed by a teacher who sees them with peers.
The one last point I would make is in terms of the evaluation of a child with ADHD, that the rating scales are helpful in terms of getting information about a child's symptoms and also impairment with regards to ADHD symptomatology of the disorder. But the other piece is comorbidity, and what the rating scales allow you to do is capture information from parents and teacher about other possible disorders that could be associated with the ADHD or could actually be a different explanation for why that child is having problems in school, perhaps with inattention, restlessness, or impulsivity.